Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
Yes. Hi, assalamu alaikum. You are out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. I am your host, Jihad Muhammad, from Atlanta, Georgia. In the first hour, we will talk about the law of sexual harassment in the workplace, also the laws of child support, and the law of search and seizure as it relates to the use of the drone planes on American soil. Also, an update on the Trayvon Martin murder trial. Tonight, at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks with Chief Magistrate Court Justice Brother Maurice Muhammad from Birmingham, Alabama, and Attorney at Law Brother Kenneth Muhammad. They're both here to talk about these topics. Also, in the second hour, at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks with Student Minister Abel Muhammad from Mas Maryam. Also, Student Minister Tony Muhammad from Muhammad's Miles 29, Miami, Florida, and former student state captain of Birmingham, Alabama, Brother Ray Muhammad from Muhammad's Miles 15, Atlanta, Georgia. They are here to discuss the divine message, the time, and what must be done, part 9 and 10, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Also, boots on the ground, we will salute the cities with the fruit of Islam who are helping the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in our communities across America. So sit back, get your questions ready, get your comments ready. Let's ride. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his servant. Let me start off by giving a word of apology. We had technical difficulties in the first 10 minutes of the show, but the show must go on. So I'd like to extend an apology on behalf of Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam under the leadership of Nation Building Network. Let me give a personal shout out. I want to say praise be to Allah that the leader and teacher and guide of the Nation of Islam, the national representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, has made it back into the States of America from his tour. And we just want to say we love you, dear Apostle, and praise be to Allah that you have made it back safe and sound. Let me get started real fast. We are running out of time tonight, and I want to thank the listeners who have been patient with us thus far. On the line with us, Brother Rafi, do we have Brother Maurice on the line? is Brother Kenneth Muhammad on the line?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, dear brother. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, brother. Good to be on.
Yes, sir, brother. And I apologize again. This has been one few minutes that's been pretty lousy around here, but we're going to get through it. Is Brother Maurice Muhammad on the line? All right. Well, let me get started because I know Brothers is, he was trying to get through during the technical difficulty, and he wasn't able to get through. But, Brother Kenneth, how are you, beloved? What's going on with you?
Oh, I'm doing well, brother. Just, you know, striving to do the work. Obviously, with the legal profession, there's a lot going on in the community all the time. So keeping busy with that and, you know, striving to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as well.
Beautiful. Well, brother, I want to get started real fast. I'm running out of time here, but let me say this to you. The law of sexual harassment. The law of sexual harassment. What is this law? How did it come about? Do you know?
Well, essentially, obviously, you have situations where a person that is in the position of a supervisor or an employer is in a superior position to their employees. And it was determined some years ago that because of this position of power on one end and powerlessness on another end, that when you bring in the element of sexual advances in the workplace, it puts the person who is in the less, you know, less powerful position in the position of essentially having acts of retaliation done to them, you know, firings, if they do not succumb to advances. It essentially, you know, was found that in many instances a person feels that they really have to do something, that they either have to choose to do something they don't want to do or be placed in a position where they lose their job. So I know that the hearings that involved Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas had a lot
right.
to do with the advancing of the law and the publicizing of this in the workplace, because it was alleged that she actually worked for Clarence Thomas at the time that he, you know, that these sexual advances, alleged sexual advances, were made. So somewhere around that time period, a number of states, because this is essentially state law that we're talking about in most instances.
Okay.
In many instances, I'll say, but there are but it's not necessarily limited to state law. But,
okay.
You know, you essentially had placed in law restrictions that would basically allow the person that has been victimized in some kind of way to bring a lawsuit.
Okay. Let me ask a question this way, because I'll be honest with you, brother. This thing has a lot of gray areas in it, to be honest with you. For example, from the definition of this, unwelcome behavior, okay, unwelcome behavior can go from anywhere from unwanted pressure for sexual favors, deliberating, touching, leaning over, concerning, or pinching, cornering or pinching, unwanted sexual looks or gestures. That's an interesting one. Unwanted letters, telephone calls, or materials of a sexual nature. These are all ingredients that deal with sexual harassment. There's another one that I have a concern with. When you talk about unwanted deliberate touching or leaning over, let me say this. If a young lady or a female in the workplace has on low-cut top, and she has on a miniskirt, and she's leaning over my desk, okay, can I say that that's sexual harassment?
Well, I don't believe that that is what the law is really attempting to address.
Okay. How about if she and her partner are in a break room and they're kissing and following each other, and I happen to see that, or a third party walks in, because the sexual harassment, my understanding, is based on one being offensive. Okay, I'm looking here. A victim may consent or agree to certain conduct and actively participate in it, even though it is offensive and objectionable. Therefore, sexual conduct is unwelcome whenever the person subjected to it considers it unwelcome. So if I'm a third party and I happen to walk into a break room somewhere and I see two partners fondling each other or kissing one another, I can't say that that's sexual harassment to me because it's offensive because I have to see this?
Well, I mean, when you're dealing with harassment, basically, you know, it's basically stated that it is unlawful to harass a person because of that person's sex, where harassment includes sexual harassment, unwelcome sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, or other verbal or physical harassment of the person. So in your first example, I think you were stating that basically the person just isn't dressed in a way where they're covering themselves. If there is some overt act on that person's part where they are essentially making advances, et cetera, I think it's one thing to say a person isn't necessarily following, you know, necessarily a dress code. But if there is an intent to engage the person in some sexually in some verbal or physical gestures or things along that line, then I think that it creeps into the realm of being harassment. Now, you know, I did state that a number of states passed laws along this line, but, you know, the federal government does, you know, regulate this as well, and it's really the federal government that initiated it, and then a number of the states came up with their own variations on the law as well. But I think the intent really, it started more with the employer-employee dynamic. But obviously any sex-based harassment in the workplace is what the law is trying to get after.
Okay, okay. It just seems so great to me, beloved. Let me go and see if the magistrate court justice is on. Is Brother Maurice on?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, sir. How are you tonight, beloved?
I'm well, by Allah's grace. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Kenneth.
Wa alaykum salam, brother.
And to, of course, to the gracious host.
Wa alaykum salam, beloved. Praise be to Allah. I'm glad you were able to get through, brothers. We're talking about sexual harassment, Brother Chief. It seems like there's a lot of gray areas with it. I'm seeing something about unwanted sexual looks or gestures. I'm seeing unwanted letters, telephone calls, or materials of sexual nature. What is that? What is an unwanted letter or a telephone call?
Well, you know, as Brother Kenneth so eloquently placed, the bottom line merit to this act or this law is to make sure that we have a level playing field, because so many times in corporate America and in any private institution, in some cases, you have to have, I know they call it in acting.
You can turn it up. I'm listening.
Brother Rafi, Brother Maurice. Brother Rafi, can you mute that other person out, please? Yes, sir. Go right ahead, Judge.
Yes, sir. You know, you have what they call couch casting, you know, where there would be certain favors given to the producer if this young lady, or in some instances this young man, will grant them sexual favors. And this kind of keeps the playing field level so that, you know, that's not the predominant and the normal course of business in the corporate sector. You know, because oftentimes when we are in a corporate sector and there has to be an unfair advantage gained, and you have a lady who's nice and, you know, voluptuous, or a young man who is, you know, firm in his build, and depending on your sexual persuasion, you find this person attractive, And you say, well, unless you play my game, you don't get the promotion. You know, so I think that's kind of where this boss kind of levels off and pretty much not necessarily eliminates, but makes it a little harder for that to be the prevalent point of our rule, if you will say. But, you know, it is a very, very basic concept of law. We just don't want a young lady or young man to their sexual performance to overrule or to be the basis of the job. We want their actual job performance to be the basis and the object of the job.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. Sexual conduct is unwelcome whenever the person subjected to it considers it unwelcome. So somebody has to be subjected to it. So, again, my question becomes, how about the third party that's looking in on two people conducting themselves in a sexual way?
Right.
Can that be considered, that person in the third party, can they consider that being sexual harassment to them because they're being subjected to having to watch this? Can that third person consider that sexual harassment?
Well, Brother Jihad, I really believe that would be more inappropriate in terms of conduct unbecoming to an employee, more so sexual harassment. Because, see, if this person does not have a position that would compromise your position, just say, for instance, you walk in and you're a VP and the janitors are making out, you know, that doesn't necessarily put you in a position where your job performance or your salary will be affected by their actions. But what it would be offensive to you as a person, and it would be unbecoming to the job scene. And these are type things that would kind of dampen the work environment. But you have to keep in mind when you're dealing with sexual harassment, in an overtone, there has to be a point of a person being subordinate to the other person, a dominant type situation where this person's position could actually be compromised. I've heard of it. You know, a young lady, a friend of mine, she said that they were at a convention, and it was widely known that the company was about to downsize. So one of the VPs came to her and said, well, hey, would you like to be my guest at the party? And when she began to kind of moonwalk a little bit and she wasn't really comfortable with going with him to the party, then he kind of casually mentioned, and you know we had talked about downsizing in your department, you know, and it was kind of like, so are you saying if I don't go to this party with you and accompany you to this party, then my job is in jeopardy, or my position is in jeopardy, or my pay is in jeopardy. You know, that's more so of the sexual harassment content that is pretty prevalent. Now, in terms of the environmental aspect because now we got all type of sexual preferences, we got all type of based on innuendos and different things like that, it could become very subjective, if you would.
Okay. Now, the touching or leaning in that it talks about here. So in other words, it's not really sexual harassment if I'm not offended by it. But
if it's
okay with you, then it's okay with me. Then that's not sexual harassment, right?
Well, in some instances, yes. Because, and what just me as a person, I tend to like lean toward the caution side because when a young lady wants to, you know, be friendly with you on the job site or whatever, you never know. Sometimes she may have another motive in place, especially depending on your position. So what used to be a very casual situation has now become a sexually intense situation.
Okay.
So, hey, you know, you look nice in that dress. You know, you're working out. Oh, what you trying to say? I'm getting fine. You know, so it now,
okay,
depending on, that's why I say it becomes subjective because sometimes the climate will change according to the agenda.
Okay. Brother Kenneth, have you experienced any lawsuits pertaining to stuff like this, sexual harassment in the workplace, where people actually try to sue?
Well, I have dealt with claims over the years. In most instances, they hadn't gone very far. But I think if I'm reading your questions correctly, I think where you may have been going in a few of your questions is this, that anytime they see a problem or a problem is seen in society and it's drafted into law, you have to come up with words where you are writing down on a piece of paper as a lawmaker what circumstances are going to constitute a violation of this, you know, this new law, this new requirement. And whenever you come up with those words, I think the lawmakers are trying their best to try to anticipate circumstances that could end up coming up. Well, when you're dealing with sex-related crimes, not just sexual harassment, but a lot of, you know, criminal laws regarding sexual behavior, you know, these words on paper that are the law, you know, you can start to split hairs in certain situations because you're dealing with people's subjective mental beliefs as to what is going on, as to what the other person wants to happen, doesn't want to happen, and all those different things. And when you're dealing with human nature between two people and you're dealing with, you know, the fact that people may be okay with one another at one point in time, may seem like they're okay with one another at another point in time, and different people's interpretations of things, then you come to situations where someone is being accused falsely. Someone is being accused where they really didn't have certain intentions, and it really spins out of control. And in all of the... Yeah. In my experience, all of the crimes and laws regarding sexual behavior, I've seen instances in which this whole, you know, this whole balancing act between the state or the federal government trying to protect a potential victim, people end up using the law to their benefit to make accusations that really are not warranted. And that happens far too often. And it's right. Almost like the problem that existed, you know, a few decades ago when they brought these laws into existence, it's almost in a lot of instances to the other extreme where you have accusations and people being put on the defense because it's really easy for someone to just point the finger at them.
Okay. Okay. Brother Maurice, you want to make a final comment on this before we move on?
You know, Brother Kenneth just placed it, you know, very well. You know, as we were saying earlier, sometimes that pendulum swings a different way when a person's motives are different. You know, I've seen situations where coworkers actually dated one another. I mean, I'm talking about legitimately dated one another. And one coworker got a promotion. The other coworker did not get the promotion. And later on, you know, when it was time for another promotion, the other coworker said that she did not get the promotion because she wouldn't no longer see the one who got the promotion at first, and now it's a problem. You know, but they had a legitimate relationship that even started before they were employees.
Okay.
So it's quite, wow, so how now can your legitimate relationship be a sexually harassing situation now that we're in the workplace now? You know,
mm-hmm.
And basically, she, as Brother Kenneth says, she made claim to that allegation, and it absolutely went nowhere, but the person who was alleged against had to put monies up so that they could defend themselves. And, you know, and the company was in, you know, the company was in risk of being, having to pay out some liability claims and all of this. So, you know, it can be a very tangled weave or a web sometimes. But I really believe when we really look at the crux of the issue, it really becomes a point of how is this relationship, is this man-woman relationship, a woman-man, a man-man, woman-woman, how is it actually leveling the playing field for the job set?
Okay. 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 Brother Rafi, do we have any callers that would like to talk to the Chief Magistrate, Court Justice, and Brother Kenneth?
Oh, I don't see anyone with their hand up, beloved.
All right, sir. All right, let me move right ahead then, sir. I want to get to child support. This is a real big issue. We've talked about this before, Brother Kenneth, Brother Maurice. One of the concerns that I have with child support is this. With the economy the way it is, okay, people can't find work, whatever the case may be, or if a brother is a felony or a person is a felony, and it really makes it really slim for them to find a job. Okay. Now, with that being said, what can a person do who is really getting himself in, or herself in debt with child support because of hardship? What can they do to protect themselves to keep from being incarcerated because the bill is getting too high?
Well, on this point, I think this is definitely one of the areas that I talked about before where there was and has been a legitimate problem in the society. The law set in motion a number of different requirements and procedures to try to deal with it. The pendulum swung to the other side where it, as long as the parent that has custody of the child make the right effort to try to get child support, there is so much in place now from a legal standpoint help them that really if the custodial parent is making the effort.
One second, Brother Kenneth. Brother Rafi, there's somebody in queue that is really making a lot of noise. I don't know if you can see them, but if you could, please mute them out. This is a very important topic, beloved. I appreciate it. Go right ahead, Brother Kenneth.
Yeah,
you got the noise coming from the speaker right now.
Excuse me, sir?
Yes, sir. The brother that's talking right now, that's where the noise is coming from, sir.
Oh, Brother Kenneth's phone? Okay.
Oh, it's coming from my phone? Oh, okay. I'm sitting here and it's pretty quiet where I'm at. So.
Go right ahead, sir.
All right. Yeah, I don't know how that could be. But in any event, I think as long as the custodial parent, the parent that has custody, makes the effort to go after the okay, we okay?
Now we are, yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, that wasn't me.
Okay.
So as long as they make the effort and they know where they are, that's usually the big problem that the parent that has the child has on their end. It's finding where the other person is, getting them served with the papers. But as long as they know where they are and they can get them served with the papers, there's plenty that's now on the books to protect them. So now the problem has come in on the other end where the system overdoes it and the parent that does not have custody finds themselves jammed up in a number of situations. And I've seen it more times than you can count where the system is really abused and you deal with people who really don't have money. And it's kind of this thing where, you know, it's a hard balancing act because the parent that's caring for this child, they have to care for the child every day. They can't say, you know, well, there's this problem, that problem, because the baby needs to eat every day. This needs to happen, that needs to happen. And if they're not really getting help, if someone is saying, well, I don't have work, I don't have this, I don't have that, a lot of times the custodial parent doesn't believe it and ends up throwing this whole system that is now in place against that other person. And you can understand to a certain degree, okay, if a long period of time goes by, you should come up with something. You need to do what you can. But the law is written where they have these rigid formulas where, based upon the father's income, the mother's income, what's spent on child care expenses, extraordinary expenses for medical care or things along those lines, health insurance premiums, et cetera, that all of that is put into a formula. And whatever the formula spits out as the amount for child support, that's what it is. And sometimes it's huge numbers that the parent that does not have custody simply cannot pay. And the system in many instances is very unmerciful for that inability to pay. You find brothers with extremely large arrearage, $50,000 in arrearage, $60,000 in arrearage, all the time. And, it really has become a system where in many instances that person is really – the system has gone too far and they're being oppressive on that person.
Right.
That does happen in many instances.
Okay. Brother Rafi, we got a 601 caller in queue.
Yes, sir. You want me to put him on?
Yes, please. 601, what say you?
Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. What can I do for you, soldier?
This is Brother Zarian Rogers out of the Hattiesburg Study Group, sir.
All praises due to Allah.
All praises due to Allah. Long live Muhammad.
Long live Muhammad.
Yes, sir. I am facing that same issue. I put myself through CDL school, and I drive trucks. So my arrears during that time, I paid all my bills up. I quit my job, went to school, paid all my bills up, and my arrears got behind. So therefore, when I got everything stable and I started working, they're not even applying my overage, which was a renegotiation, to my original contract of child support, to my arrears. So when I check them about it, they say, it was a half a payment this month. You might need to check with your employer. It's back and forth. And it's really being taken advantage of. And now it's to the point to where they have a hotline in Mississippi to where they basically answer all the calls, take notes, deliver messages to your caseworker, and me as a man, I cannot speak to my caseworker. And she says that I'm not returning phone calls right now.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's been, and it's to the fact, I put myself on child support. I'm going through a divorce. I knew that my child, through the teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we already know that Allah hates divorce, but yet inside of that, if we war with our mate, we are to war in the best of men.
Right.
Therefore, child is not to be punished for our
That's
punishment.
Right.
So.
Well, brother, let me ask you quick. Do you have a question for Brother Maurice and Brother Kenneth on this issue?
Yes. Brother Maurice, Brother Kenneth, what do you do in a situation like this, as far as where there's a stonewall that is basically the system being put in front of you, and where it's basically they're saying, well, we got your money, deal with it, in a situation like that, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, soldier.
Yeah, what I would tell the brother is he wants to have a court order that has his current required child support payment and separate and apart from that a payment plan for his arrearage. And he wants to have the current payment amount based upon today's numbers, meaning what he makes not 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but what he makes today, what his ex makes today, et cetera. So a lot of times what happens is people don't go back to court, get the current payment amount set based on the real numbers as of today, but then obviously you can't pay a huge arrearage all at one time. So there has to be and understanding where the judge sets in place a monthly payment amount that'll be separate from your ongoing payments that is that goes separately to your arrearage. And if it's not two really clear numbers, you could find yourself in some real trouble.
Wow. Is the soldier still on the line or did he hang up?
Yes, sir. I'm still on the line. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Did he answer your question, beloved? Do you have another part to that?
Yes, sir. He did. But that is the renegotiation of my arrearage. That was what it's supposed to be. But as you said, they ran it together and added an extra $50 a month onto my, I think, $25 per payment. They changed it from 50-something to basically to 77. And then from there, when I went to add it up, I said, well, where is the overage throughout the months that I've been working for this place? And then also, what they also do is, I told them, I need to go ahead and start sending money orders or test this up on my own. She told me, well, we already have the court paperwork in order. There's no need for you to do that. Don't do that. Instead of me working on the balance and basically balancing, helping them balance the books, they live to get you behind because they have an interest column on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
wow.
Sir.
So you're saying...
Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, you're saying that you believe that they miscalculated your arrearage or they miscalculated what you should be paying on a monthly basis now?
No, sir. Basically, what I'm saying is they have misappropriated the funds somehow. They just disappeared far as to where all the arrearage for, let's say, for the year that I've been working for this company and the 6 months or the 7 months that they've been actually taking it out of my check. It's not, my rear balance has not changed. And I just paid it off with my income tax, and then they took an overage of that. And when they were supposed to take $2,163, the balance left that I received from my income tax was short around about $400. And it's, I understand that the states are going through a crunch, but this is for my child, not to facilitate other things. You understand?
Should he take them back to court, Brother Kenneth?
Well, we have a saying that Islam is mathematics, and this is a situation where you can't dispute mathematics. If he has over X number of months, they're taking out X number of dollars, and those amounts are not reflected in his overall arrearage and not, within the deductions that should have been made. As long as he has his paper trail and can show each one of those months and show how it's not being deducted, that's something that cannot be disputed as long as he has his paper trail. So if it sounds like a situation where they made an allegation and either he didn't have the paperwork right there in front of him or somehow, some way, they were able to make an argument that kind of defied the mathematics, and he didn't get a chance to respond. So I don't know if he may need an attorney. I don't know. It sounds like, though, that he probably does need to find his way back in there with all of the documents to prove
it. Right. Right. Right.
Sure.
All right, soldier. I don't know if that's helpful to you or not, but we've got to run on. You might have to go on back to court, I think, beloved.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That has been... Any advice or any counseling on this is better than none at all.
Well, soldier, we're going to have this show again. We've had it before, and we want to have it again. We're just running out of time tonight, and I do apologize for that. But, brother, we're going to have this show again with the help of Allah.
All praise to Allah.
And thank you for your call, soldier.
Yes, sir. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Can I stop it? I just want to say on the flip side, because I deal with this enough where I know if there are some sisters listening to this, they might say, well, look, they present that one half of the story
Yes, sir.
Don't have the money, but trust me, brother.
Yes, sir.
I have been on both sides of this thing, and I'm telling you that there are a lot of brothers out here that are doing a whole lot of creative and tricky things to get out of paying their child support. And
right.
I just can't let us switch topics without acknowledging that half of it.
We yes, sir.
Here, and you have a lot of these sisters out here caring for these children, and brothers are ducking and dodging and doing some creative things not to pay a dime. And, so
and brother Kenneth, let me add to that, brother, and it makes it bad for the brothers who really mean well.
That's true.
You know, yeah, it makes it bad for the brothers. Like this brother here sounds like he's got a good case to me, you know. But the brothers that do that, or the men that do that, they make it difficult for the ones that are really trying hard to step up and do what's right by their children.
Right, and sometimes the system can't really tell the difference between the two.
That's right. Right. Okay. All right. Brother Maurice, are you there, sir? Did he get dropped off? So, all right. Let me go here real quick, Brother Kenneth. The situation with Trayvon Martin, how's that looking? I understand that George Zimmerman is changing his strategy now. He's not going to use the stand your ground. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be completely honest with you. You may want Brother Maurice on this one a little bit more.
Okay.
I am occasionally kept up to breath on different ins and outs, but I can't say that I know all of the different twists and turns right now. Because,
okay.
You know, there's a lot going on, but on that
right. I do know he's changing it from stand your ground to self defense now. And
okay.
that they're making the credible witness to be somebody that can't be believable, because they said that she's been caught lying or something to that extent. So now that they're saying she's not a credible witness now. So now now everything falls on George Zimmerman, since there's nobody else to tell the story.
Yeah. Now as far as I know, they set a trial date for sometime early summer. And I think the person that you're talking about is, I believe, the young lady that said that she was on the phone with him at a certain point in time. And, you know, they're saying that there was something that she had lied about later on that doesn't really have to do with the specific timeline, exactly when the events happened, but something later. And now they're trying to, you know, question her credibility.
Right.
So that's what I think you may be speaking to.
Right, right. Okay. Is Brother Maurice back, Brother Rafi? Yeah, he got dropped off. Well, let me ask you this, Brother Kenneth. Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We're talking about search and seizure laws.
Right.
The search and seizure law, from my understanding, is to protect every citizen, their privacy. Okay,
right
to free, according to this, and every citizen's right to be free from unreasonable government intrusion into their persons, homes, businesses, and property. Now, with the spy plane, for those of you who don't know what the drone plane is, it's actually a spy plane that we've been using overseas. But now we're understanding, we're coming to find out that there are cases inside the United States where the drone plane is being used inside the United States. When does this become intrusive to the private citizen?
Well, I guess there's two different uses for these drone planes. One is as with a camera where they're peeping, you know, with a video camera or listening device, and another one is where they're shooting rockets and missiles at people. I guess your question is going specifically to the video camera usage. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Well, I really, if a person has done something that gives law enforcement probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed or is being committed, and law enforcement goes to a judge and receives a search warrant, and as a result of that search warrant, they then use, you know, this device. I, you know, perhaps there are some instances in which a scenario like that could actually come into play. But if it's the kind of thing where they're just, you know, out there flying planes and snooping, then I would say it's definitely a violation of that Fourth Amendment right that people have against, you know, unreasonable searches and seizures.
Okay. All right. Is Brother Maurice back yet?
I'm here, there, brother.
Oh, there you go, brother Maurice. I got to ask you this, beloved. From my understanding, the president falls under Article 2 with the drone plane. Does he have the power to actually order an attack on American soil?
He does have the power to, I guess, to declare war. Now, what is giving President Obama and any other person who holds that position most of their juice and most of their power now is the Patriot Act. You know, it was signed nearly 10 years ago, and it was kind of as a fallout with 9/11 and so on and so forth, and we kind of forgot about it a little bit, but it was some major pieces in there that would kind of quell, you know, as Brother Kenneth mentioned, our Fourth Amendment right. It would kind of quell that with, and if you note, most of the drones are used after an alleged allegation or either an association. They're saying that not necessarily probable cause, but basic suspicion would be grounds enough to violate that person's, because now what we're dealing with is public safety. Public safety has always been an inroad, if you would, for the government to maneuver in certain ways or maneuver it in ways that were detrimental sometimes to the constitutional rights of the citizens. And when we're down south, that was the premise behind segregation. It was not so much of anything else, but it was for public safety that we would not have unlawful participation, which was the crime committed when black people and white people shared the same facility. So it kind of moves back into the same scenario where we're dealing with a boogeyman, if you would, and we have to deal with that boogeyman on its primal level, so no one is beyond suspicion. So we now have the right or the governmental liberty to kind of forge our way and forge our way into the private sector and private lives of the citizens.
Okay. Now, can you explain real quick the Patriot Act real quick? So that kind of suspends the right to privacy, I guess, as we speak, right?
It kind of places us in a very, very, if you would, a quasi-mindset of martial law, where it gave the government certain authorities over certain constitutional rights in the preservation of our protection of our country. So when 9/11 hit, it kind of eliminated some of the aspects of being able to bug people's homes, and that's where the drone was born from, being able to surveillance people without them knowing it, so that we could curtail any type of terroristic acts or terrorist threats that may go on in the city or may go on in the country.
So this suspends the reason to believe, right? So we no longer need the probable cause now? Or does this suspend the probable cause, the reason to believe we need a search warrant? This suspends that now with the drone?
Well, what it does, it gives I don't want to call it a probable cause, but it gives a reason on a base of suspicion to begin to have a legal ground to start the process. It's violating your rights, you know, because you're dealing with this person or that person, and they are known to be a known terrorist. Now we have to investigate your dealings and your whereabouts, because now you are associating people with people who may associate with a person who may know something about terrorism. You see what I'm saying? So if in order to find that boogeyman, we will throw away everything that the country, from what I understand and have read about constitutional rights, we're willing to throw that away in order to maintain a certain level of security.
Okay. Okay. Well, brothers, I want to thank you both for being on the line tonight. And for those that had questions for Chief Magistrate Court Justice Brother Maurice Muhammad and Attorney Brother Kenneth Muhammad, I'm sorry, we won't be able to take any questions at this time. We're getting ready to run straight into the second hour of the show. But let me ask Brother Maurice and Brother Kenneth, can you come back at another date at an earlier time, maybe say sometime in about 2 weeks or so?
Sure.
Because I have a lot of people that have questions. They got their hands raised, and they really want to ask questions, and we just don't have enough time tonight to get it because we ran into some technical difficulty earlier, and so time is just out now for the first hour. But I want to thank both of you brothers for being on the show tonight. Brother Kenneth, you going to hang out or you going to let go? Okay, he's probably gone already. All right. Well, Brother Maurice, thank you, sir.
Thank you, dear Brother Mel. I bless you and your listening audience.
Yes, sir. Your listening audience, too, my brother. May
okay.
Allah bless you.
Yes,
sir. As-salamu alaykum. Brother Rafi, let's give a salute to the soldiers who got their boots on the ground across America. Can we do that? Let me start down here, down at the bottom, where we go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Fruit of Islam in Tulsa, Oklahoma, got their boots on the ground. Shout out, Tulsa. Portland, Oregon. I know you thought we never had no soldiers up there. Now, we got soldiers in Portland, Oregon, and the soldiers in Portland, Oregon got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers in Portland, Oregon. Let's go down into the southeast, down in Columbus, Georgia. The mighty soldiers of Columbus, Georgia got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers, some mighty warriors down in that Columbus, Georgia area. Montgomery, Alabama. The home of the Confederate flag. But there's some soldiers in Montgomery, Alabama, who got their boots on the ground. Keep up the good work, Montgomery. Shout out to you. New Orleans, Louisiana. The Big Easy. There's some soldiers in the Big Easy. And the soldiers in the Big Easy, New Orleans, got their boots on the ground. Shout out, New Orleans. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Rain, hail, snow, makes no difference. The soldiers in Milwaukee got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers. Benton Harbor, Michigan. Yes, Benton Harbor's always got something going on in Michigan. Shout out, Benton Harbor. Keep up the good work. In New Jersey. In North New Jersey, in a study group called the Northwest Study Group, the soldiers in North got their boots on the ground. Keep up the good work, soldiers. And Stockton, California. Yes, we got some soldiers in Stockton, California. The mighty Stockton, California. Y'all keep up the good work, Stockton. And our number one city with their boots on the ground this week goes to Phoenix, AZ, Phoenix, Arizona, the mighty desert soldiers of Phoenix, Arizona. They got their boots on the ground, fast moving, fast thinking, right down to the modern times. Keep up the good work, soldiers, and I'll see you real, real soon. Next week, we'll be right back with some more top flight soldiers around the country who love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and they're responding to the call. All praise is due to Allah. Well, we're heading right into the second hour. And I want to see if our panel is on tonight. Is Brother Student Minister Abel Muhammad on the line?
Yes, sir, dear brother. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam.
How are you, dear brother?
Wonderful, by Allah's grace. Just happy to be back on with you, dear brother, and anxious to share what I'm and to learn also from the other panelists what we've gleaned from the last installment, the latest installment of the time and what must be done, and just continuing again, thankful for the opportunity to share and to learn with you this evening, brother.
Oh, brother, yes, sir. Thank you for being on the panel tonight. Is Brother Tony Muhammad from the Top Flight Miles 29, Miami, Florida, on the line?
He is on the line. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother.
Wa alaikum salam. So, how are you?
Oh, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on the show with always such an exquisite panel.
Yes, sir.
Set up for this program with Brother Abel, and of course you have alternating panelists, and those that also came before us and spoke earlier. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on, and I thank Almighty God Allah for this blessed opportunity and to serve in the capacity I do under my regional leadership, under Brother Rasul Akeem Muhammad, 7th Regional Representative,
yes.
The Honorable Mr. Farrakhan, and of course he serves the leader, teacher, and guide in our midst today, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, which we bear witness. He is a divine man.
Yes.
Serving in this mission, serving in the mission of his father, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Praise be to Allah. And our last panelist at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talk tonight is the former student, state captain out of Birmingham, Alabama, now in Atlanta, Georgia. Is Brother Ray Muhammad on the line?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother.
Wa alaikum salam, soldier. How are you tonight?
I'm doing absolutely great. And again, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be on the program with Brother Abel and Brother Tony. I'm anxiously looking forward to getting involved in the dialogue and engaging, because the minister said on fire this past Saturday, and that spirit have transcended down to my spiritual father, Tony Muhammad, who I listened to a couple of days ago as he lit the airways up. So
yes,
I'm absolutely on fire, and I warn you in the beginning and the listening audience that I am, by God's grace, fired up tonight. So I am so ready to get involved with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad as given to us by a leader, teaching guide, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, in the time and what must be done.
All praise is due to Allah, and we're going to try to get student Minister Tony on the line. I don't know if it's going to be this month, but we're definitely going to try to get him on for next month. I know he's committed to coming on some of the shows of the network, so inshallah, he'll stop through this one. We would love to have him, the beloved. But let me go ahead and get started, and first of all, thank all three of you, because you have all been on this show. Brother Abel and Brother Tony in particular has come on every week that we air to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spread this message, and Brother Ray, as our third alternate. You all have always shown up to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spread this message and create the dialogue just like he asked. And for that, I thank all three of you, my brothers. Let me go ahead and ask the question to Brother Abel. What stood out at you, sir? Part 10. What grabbed you on the time and what must be done?
Well, you know, dear brother, and the one line that stands out in my mind, and the word, but the line that stands out is when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, about approximately halfway into the program, said that I am trying my best to save your life.
Mm.
And that, to me, I mean, that's the kind of love, that's the kind of spirit, that's the kind of leadership that we have in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And the one word that if I could use one word to describe this episode 10, for me personally, it would be the word warning. It was full of warnings for leadership, for government, for spiritual leaders, for you and me, for believers, for non-believers, for those in power, for those who want power. I mean, it was just so beautifully, and I'll say it like this, it was so beautifully laid out in terms of the depth and the breadth of what he covered, yet it was very, 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 in my opinion, very, very critical presentation where he really talked about the fall of America and us who are in it. But he did it in such a loving way where it didn't seem necessarily to be overwhelming of our spirit in gloom or doom, or even in the minister's presentation. You could feel that spirit of he's telling us what is happening and what's going to happen, but he doesn't want to see us go down with the fall of this world. So it was like a great appeal of a father or a loved one trying to see us going down a path that he doesn't want us to go and trying to help us avert that path. And that's the word that just keeps coming to my mind, warning. It was full of warning. I looked up the word, and it means when you warn someone, it means to tell someone in advance of an impending or possible danger, problem, or other unpleasant situation. To give someone forceful or cautionary advice about their actions or conduct. And that's exactly what he did, even as far as quoting from the Holy Quran in the 5th chapter in the 67th verse, where it says, O messenger, deliver that which has been delivered to thee from thy Lord. And if thou do it not, thou hast not delivered his message. And Allah will protect thee from men. Surely Allah guides not the disbelieving people. If I remember correctly, he read that at least twice during the program. And it's important because that is his responsibility and his duty, and he's doing his duty. And those of us who hear, we have to now increase in our commitment to help this beautiful servant of God, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. If we love him, if we know he loves us and are trying to reciprocate that love to him and gratitude to God for giving us this type of man with this type of heart and this type of leadership in this critical hour, then we must increase. And I'm saying for me personally, I mean, I just know there's much, much more that we must do to help our people to heed the call and begin these dialogues, these conversations, and these actions, which will get us out of the fall of America and into safe ground from out of the danger zone, which the minister outlined and so beautifully illustrated and warned us about in this episode 10.
Yes, sir. Brother Tony, sir, what say you, sir? What stood out at you
about time and what
must be done, part 9 and 10, sir?
Yes, sir. Well, dealing with part 10, I like to veggie back because we don't piggyback.
Yes, sir.
Off of one another. I like to veggie back off of what Brother Abel had to say, because that's exactly where I wanted to go to. He did, in fact, say that quote from the Holy Quran, Surah 5, verse, or Ayat 67, in saying, O messenger, deliver that which has been revealed to thee from thy Lord. And if thou do it not, thou hast not delivered his message. And Allah will protect thee from men. Surely Allah guides not the disbelieving people. Well, we have to understand how it corresponds to self, the little messenger, doing the work of the messenger in our midst today, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he repeated again in this past broadcast about starting a dialogue with our people, not just among the believers, but among the people, starting a dialogue on Facebook, on Twitter, YouTube, wherever else we could dialogue with our people on social networking forums. And we're also taught to argue in the best of manners, as it says in the Holy Quran. Now, I want to really emphasize that and go into what that means. It does not mean start a debate. It does not mean be adversarial to others, but it means start a dialogue. One thing as Muslims that we do not do, and many, I don't understand this, Brother Jihad, but many of us are who say that we are with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we have friends on Facebook and on other social networking forums. We are in the social network of others that have clearly stated openly that they are opposed to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I really do not understand that. And many of us get a kick out of debating them. on our page. And so I want us to really think about what we look like when we are constantly engaged in that type of behavior. Surely, in some cases, these kind of debates do sharpen us, but if we're just wasting our time debating others that do not agree with us, what, number one, what does that make us look like? Number two, are we not wasting time in going out to those who are, who have the opportunity to become open-minded to what we have to present to them? Right now, we have to increase our work as it relates to the mission. And by going on to Facebook and other social networking forums, engage in debate. This is how we waste time. As a Muslim, as Muslims, really, we should not be engaging into debates with other Muslims publicly. That is not the way of a Muslim. Wherever there are disputes, that is to take place privately. When it comes down to deliberative dialogue with our people, it's not a debate. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us a way to communicate with our people whenever there are disputes. We are to find some type of medium ground, something that they state that we can agree on, and we emphasize those points so as to bring them closer to us. And then, inshallah, with the will of God, we could bring them closer and closer through our commonality to where we believe, what the truth that we believe in. Gradually, we could bring them to the truth. But if our disposition towards them is an adversarial one, then truly we will not be fulfilling what Allah has in store for us.
Yes. Okay. Brother Ray, sir.
Yes,
let
sir.
Let me ask you this, sir, because I think you might want to address this just for your spirit tonight. The minister spoke about after Moses left, Aaron had a hard time. And the minister said he started having a hard time after the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad left, and he still is having a hard time. What is the hard times the minister is receiving that he continues to receive today? Can you speak to that?
Brother, thank you very much for that question. Actually, you preluding into, I think you're tapping into my thought pattern, because like Brother Abel and Brother Tony, I kind of got a different feel of what the minister, from my perspective, what he was pretty much saying. The reason I believe that the minister is having such a hard time going after our people, getting out, not really going after them, because that's not hard for him at all to do, but for our people to be able to understand the minister's words, because so many of these, and the minister asks, why don't the preachers, we got a church on every corner. No, we have 3 and 4 churches on every corner. Why are they not preparing the people for the judgment? These mm-hmm. churches are sitting up there, and they're teaching prosperity. They're teaching things other than the time, and the time is mandating that it is judgment. So unless we begin to start preparing the people for judgment, many of our people are going to fall victim to the judgment of Almighty God. The reason why I believe the minister is having such a hard time, or the people are having a hard time to come to him, because so many jealous preachers who would not lift up the banner of what Minister Farrakhan is teaching and know beyond a shadow of a doubt what this man is teaching is absolutely the truth. I mean, how long do we have to sit here? This man have been preaching this well over a half a century plus. We see that we can look out to the atmosphere and see that fall goes into winter, and winter goes into spring, and spring goes into summer, but we can't discern the signs of the time. Minister Farrakhan is curing us in to what is about to take place. Look at the weather, man. Even yesterday, my son and I were sitting in the house, and it hailed, and I saw hail the size of baseballs. And it seemed as though the hail was going to break the windows, but Minister Farrakhan has been telling the preachers for this
last 10 weeks, really, for years, you now have to begin to teach the judgment of Almighty God. I'm looking through the scriptures, and in the book of Revelation, it's dealing with the judgment. Matthew is dealing with the signs of time. Luke is dealing with the signs of time, the sun, the moon, the stars are all angry. Men's hearts are failing because of the fear of what they see coming. We have to begin to start going after our people, yes. But we're going to have to teach our people, if they do not conform, if we do not conform to the dictates, mandates of Almighty God, then we will go down with this wicked government. Long are the days where we had enough time. Time is absolutely over for us. Either we stand with Farrakhan or we be killed outright with those who are going to oppose the coming of the Son of Man. We can look in the book of Matthew. It tells us how he's coming. I mean, we can read the scriptures while we're not being in compliance to the scriptures, because those who are standing in the way of the judgment of God are the preachers, and it is some of us. But then, like Moses took a few of them up on the mountain when they wanted to hear the voice of God, 300 plus, and then they end up dying. We're going to have to be obedient to the word of God, coming from the man of God, and that man is the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. What other man do we know that can call 1 million men and 2 million come up? Is that not feeding the multitudes? What is it that this man got to do to the preachers when he comes to their churches and he teach the word to them better than they understand it, and he leads the congregation much better, but then the preacher goes back and they still teach his watered-down, mamsy-pamsy, fake religion and his fake understanding of what religion is? So the reason why it's such a hard time, man, because we're stiff-necked, hard-hearted, and we're rebellious, and the judgment is not only going to fall upon America, the white man is also going to fall upon us if we don't begin to start listening to what the Honorable Louis Farrakhan is telling us from the teachings of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad that he got from God himself. We can look at the scriptures and read that Moses talked to some burning bush, but we can't understand that Elijah Muhammad talked to a living man, Master Farah Muhammad, and Master Farah Muhammad begins to teach the man the signs of the time, and Minister Farrakhan now is articulating what was taught some years ago. It is now theology of time. So the reason why we're having such a difficult time, because of the chastisement of America, a chastisement of God, is coming down on America, and many of us are going to die, brother, in this our judgment.
Thank you, beloved. Thank you so much, sir. Brother Abel, sir?
Yes, sir.
Sir?
Go ahead there, brother.
I was going to ask you, when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said point number 10, he talked about how Moses, referring it to the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, had prayed to Allah to expand his breast and loose the knot on his tongue. Do you see the knot loosening in the language of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, where it's attracting the world? If you do or do not, give us an illustration of you seeing it, or if you don't see it, give us an illustration of that.
Oh, dear brother, I can absolutely see it. I was blessed 2 weeks ago to take part. There was a sister who hosted several people at her house to watch the installment of the Time and What Must Be Done. And these
yes,
were
sir.
Brothers and sisters. These were brothers and sisters from different parts of Africa, the Caribbean. I know of other people who have invited people from all over the United States, not necessarily Muslims or believers, but I know Christians who are watching. I know black people who are watching, Latino or Hispanic people, indigenous people, white people who are watching. And what you're seeing in the language of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the absolute outgrowth, the natural outgrowth of what was in the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that is like a seed that takes time to totally burst open for everyone to be able to see and better appreciate it, what was contained within the seed. Not that there was anything wrong with the seed. Without the seed, you can't get what grows out of the seed. So in the 40s and 50s and 60s, where you have a very specific language and message used, it was a time of growth that was not as visible. Now with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, through social media, through the internet, through Twitter, through cable, through every aspect that we have, including the Final Call newspaper, is delivering that same message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But as Brother Ray just said, the time is so critical today that he's delivering the language so plainly and so magnificently that it doesn't matter if you're black, it doesn't matter if you're white, it doesn't matter if you're brown, Asian, or whatnot, any of those types, you can hear the truth and see the truth of the circumstances he's explaining to us. He said on Saturday he wanted us to dialogue, or no, he wanted us to discuss and create dialogue. Well, what does it mean to discuss? What does it mean to create dialogue? He said he wanted us to talk and have dialogue, but not with vitriol and bitterness. There's very specific instructions and a method and a way that he's giving us so that we can win in this hour. The truth from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that he got from God himself is absolutely the key to getting our people and all people out of the grip of Satan and the condition of mental death and spiritual and emotional and even physical degradation that we're all suffering from. But without knowing what it means to discuss, what it means to dialogue, what is vitriol, what is bitterness, how come we can't speak with vitriol and bitterness? We can have passion, but that passion has to be devoid of vitriol and bitterness. Vitriol means cruel and bitter criticism. Bitterness means resentment, a feeling of deep and bitter anger and ill will. How can the minister who opened up the program by saying that he's trying his best to save our life? He said that we're in a danger zone right now, and he's trying to save a great nation, speaking of the United States of America. This is the man of God who we say we believe in. He said he's trying to save a great nation and us, a people who have been rebelling against the call of God. Well, why does he have to do both of those things? Because if we've been rebelling from the call of God, what is the call of God? It's the same call that he made to the children of Israel to come out of Egypt, to let go of Pharaoh and his people. But as long as the people don't let go, then the man whose heart is after the heart of God, the servant of God, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he knows that he can't ask God to bring down the wrath and judgment in full while the people that he's raised to save, the people that he loves, are totally in bed, totally ensnared, totally wrapped up with that same enemy that God has come to destroy. So what he's giving us today is a modern technology, a modern methodology, a modern language and way to use to win our people. You can't tell 15 and 16-year-olds today, you can't tell our people that the white man is the devil just like that, because they don't know the history. They don't know they were slaves. All they see is other black hands on the other side of guns pointed at them. All they see is other people who look like them putting our communities in distress. Now, we know who the ultimate enemy is, but he's showing us the way to win our people, and he's saying to discuss with them. But what does it mean to discuss? It means to consider or examine by argument, comment, talk over or write about, especially to explore solution. That's the key right there, brothers and sisters. Everyone is in want. Everyone is in distress. And if we don't have solutions to the problem, which only God through his Christ and their servant is offering to us, then we really have nothing to offer to our people. That's the problem with the Christian pastor. They can't teach what they don't know. They can't give what they don't have. And what they don't have is divine guidance. But I'm with Brother Ray. They have to. I won't say they. We have to. All today. Heed the call of the man who God is clearly and distinctly making clear to the world, I'm backing him. And we have to, as those who claim to love him, those who claim to be with him and want to help him, we have to increase in our discipline, in our commitment, and our love for our people, so that when our people meet us and hear us, they hear not vitriol, not bitterness, but they hear the love of God from the servant of God coming through us, so that we cannot be just
helpers in the cause, not just those trying to discipline in the cause, but we want to be true representatives carrying the spirit, the word, and the life and the way of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, which is the way of God to our people who are suffering regardless of what their class, condition, or profession is.
Thank you, sir. Brother Tony, sir. Brother Tony, are you there?
I'm sorry, I'm here, dear brother.
All right.
I don't know
the
what
Honorable
happened.
Yes, sir. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan talked about the people being pushed toward the center of the country. What say you, sir?
Oh, dear brother, I think this goes along very well with what Brother Abel just had to say, because I was just preparing to discuss that right now. And tying in what the brother said prior to that, you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was speaking about the preachers in the churches, not teaching about the judgment, but we have to ask ourselves if we are treating our mosques like churches. If we ourselves, maybe we're not even attending the mosque. What are we doing to warn the people, to judge to tell the people about the judgment, excuse me? What are we doing to in regards to the study of what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is discussing with us? Every Wednesday and Friday night, we make the studies available in regards to what he is teaching us in the time and what must be done. Are we going out to our classes and studying his words and answering questions? We have never studied like this ever before in the Nation of Islam in our mosques. And I strongly encourage our brothers and sisters who are not regularly attending to attend their mosques, mosque services. And those of us that are not a part of a mosque or just like coming out or have never attended a Muhammad's mosque or study group ever, I encourage you to make it out to on a Wednesday or Friday night to your local study group or mosque, because what we are doing right now is engaging in the study. And we are learning how to make these teachings 100% defendable through these studies. In regards to what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan discussed in regards to the movement to the center of the country, I will say this. You take a look at him right now. He just had finished up a tour in the Caribbean. It's not that the judgment will only take place with the four beasts as he outlined it, in America, Italy, Germany, and what was the fourth one?
I believe it's
England.
Italy, right?
Excuse me.
England.
It was
okay.
England. Yes, it was England. Well, the judgment is not limited to these four, although these are the four beasts that will catch the brunt, the most of the judgment. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, historically, and especially when he wrote in the Pittsburgh Courier in the late 1950s, he wrote about how even the South American countries and Caribbean countries would experience the judgment themselves. Anyone who did trade with the United States, what did he teach to the Caribbean nations when he did his tour? I believe he said these words. He said, an island in the Caribbean cannot stand on its own. The same methodology, the same program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaching us to unify here. He took that program in the Caribbean and taught that same program to the peoples of the Caribbean, urging them to unite, because no Caribbean island can stand on its own. In regards to the judgment, yes, the Caribbean will be affected. We experienced the Hurricane Sandy this past winter or fall. I looked up the estimated damage of Hurricane Sandy in the Caribbean. It caused a damage of $315 million. However, in America, on the eastern coastlines of America, in the Northeast, it caused a damage of an estimated $50 billion. And see, by that, you can see who is most affected by the judgment. And that will ever increase. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad made reference to this in The Fall of America, which the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan told us in the program that it is a required book for us to have. He urged all scholars, anyone and everyone, to get a copy of that book, even white people, as it teaches us what will happen in the judgment. It describes in the book, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad describes how the coastlines of America will continue to become damaged and be affected, and there will be a movement towards the center of the country. That is why Chicago is considered to be the new capital of Islam, if you will, the new Islam that is coming into being. And so it is in the center of the country. And so we have to understand that it is being positioned that way for a special purpose, because all of the coastlines, whether we're talking about the eastern seaboard, the east coast, or California, all of this is going to be wiped out. Even Florida, we are taught, will be severely affected. If not, it's not going to even be there. So this is something that we need to prepare ourselves for, and we begin preparing for it by doing as he instructs us to do and pick up that copy of The Fall of America. And if we don't have it, hurry up, get your copy, and inform yourself as to what is to take place.
Thank you, sir. Brother Ray Muhammad, sir.
Yes, sir.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on part 10 also talked about, he pleaded and talked to the government and talked about separation and how many of the presidents, like Lincoln and Jefferson, were not integrationists. What say you, sir?
Brother Jihad and what Brother Tony was saying, I'd like to read something to him. One thing we really have got to understand, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan asked us, and Brother Tony just articulated this, to pick up Fall of America.
Mm-hmm.
He asked us to pick up Fall of America for a specific reason, because America is falling. This book was written in 1973, and when Minister Farrakhan asked us on Saturday to pick the book up again, I went and I read the entire book again. And 25 years old in the nation of Islam, and I got a more profound understanding of the words that I read when I was just a baby in the nation. But it says in here, the opening chapter 13, never since the creation of Adam and Eve have there been such chaotic times as we are witnessing today. The worst time, the worst is yet to come. There is no peace among the nations of the earth. Now, this is back in 1973 when this book was written. Minister Farrakhan, along with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, okay, America, if you're not going to do right by us, I'm reading in the Final Call, Jeff, the newest edition of the Final Call, March the 19th edition. Cleveland, 13 cops, 137 rounds, killing two people. God damn, at what point are we going to say enough is enough? You're not going to feed us. You're not going to educate us. You're not going to teach us right, because how can they know, as the scriptures say, unless they have a teacher? And how can we have a teacher unless that teacher is sent? Minister Farrakhan is one that is sent, but they're not listening to him. So we're saying, like Moses said, let us go. You're killing us. You're not taking care of us. You're killing us. Did I say you're killing us? Outright. Black on black crime is at an all-time high. Why is it an all-time high? Because jobs are at an all-time low. You're not educating us properly, because it's saying word down, mamsy pamsy, lackadaisical education system that is about the 16th or 18th in the world on the bottom. I mean, it's doing nothing for us. So if you're not going to do right by the people, separation is the next best thing. We tried the integration piece. We gave up all of our hotels, our restaurants, our schools, our businesses. We gave you everything that you could possibly have. We gave you our lives. We died for you, America, but you have not done right by the black man. So if you're not going to do right by us, Minister Farrakhan is the bell witness what the scriptures say, but then let us go. But you don't want to do that. Why don't you want to let the black man go and build a new reality for ourselves? What is it going to take? Now Allah is hitting Florida
these mosquitoes coming this summer is going to attack Florida. Minister Farrakhan also said that a law can use a gnat to disturb this cracker. It is time that America let the black man go, and if you don't let us go, then Minister Farrakhan said, continue to watch the weather. What's happening in Christendom? 600 years of Pope resigned. Why did that white boy resign? You understand? They had to get a new Pope. Look at the signs of the time. You understand? And we sit around here milquetoasting this thing, man. We can't milquetoast it anymore. Time dictates the agenda. Either you let us go or don't let us go, and God is going to kill you outright. Farrakhan is backed up by the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and Master Farah Muhammad, and we're saying separate us because we can no longer allow you to continue to do what you're doing. He mentioned that if you're going through a divorce, the best thing to do if you can't get along in peace, it's time that you separate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for the separation. I mean, look at what's going on in America. 29 states in drought. Pestilence is hitting America. It's killing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, are we going to sit around here waiting for the white man to do something to give up, like the scripture say, Lazarus sitting around the rich man table begging for the crumbs, and the Honorable Louis Farrakhan have laid out our economic blueprint for us from the teachings of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad? Everybody not going to come to the mosque. If they don't come to Muhammad, then Muhammad got to go to them. So that is why Minister Farrakhan asked us to study and then go out and form study group circles in our own community. He's asking the gangbangers now, those they call gangbangers, he's sitting down and talking to them because there's an army that got to be built, man. We need a piece of this land that we can call our own, and we need an army to protect it like any sovereign and civilized nation. So it's time out for all this plain, mousy-pousy, soft-spoken talk. We got to be free, man, today.
All praise is due to Allah. You're out on the front line with the fruit of Islam, student minister Abel Muhammad Mas Mariam, student assistant minister Tony Muhammad from Miami, Florida, Mas 29, and my brother here in Atlanta, Georgia, brother Ray Muhammad. Brother Abel, sir, what say you to this? The minister talks about part 10 on the time and what must be done. He spoke about men's hearts failing them with fear for what they see coming. Can you address that, sir?
Yes, sir, dear brother. You know, it's really right on point because the signs of the times that he's laying out for us is the interpretation, the proper interpretation of the scriptures that we've been holding in our homes in the form of the Bible and Holy Quran. Those same scriptures that preachers have been selectively teaching from. And what we see happening today, the failing of men's hearts, is because we haven't been taught properly in some instances, and the overwhelming catastrophes around us are too much because there's not enough faith and knowledge and force on the inside of us to combat the circumstances on the outside because we haven't been taught properly. But today God is making it clear by standing up his servant distinctly from all those others who claim to be leaders, who claim to be servants of God, who claim to be those who are chosen by God to lead and teach the people and preach the truth and the year and acceptable year of our Lord. There is one man that's being backed, by those same calamities. His words are backed by the actions of God, not because he seeks something of punishment for us, but it will only be through punishment that many of us will change from our ways which were imposed upon us and taught to us by our enemy. And you know, brother, I'm reminded as I'm thinking about your question that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I believe it was in 2009 or 2010 during Savior's Day, he said to us that our problem is that the enemy has already let us go, but we refuse to let go of the enemy. And I'm reminded of the scripture in the book of Numbers, in I believe it's the 21st chapter, where it talks about the Lord sending fiery serpents amongst the people that bit the people. and much people of Israel died because the children of Israel were being rebellious to the following of Moses and Aaron and the guidance from God. So God sent fiery serpents. And if we recall, the minister has been warning us that the fiery serpent are angry white people. And as Brother Ray quoted from the cover of the Final Call newspaper, that is the proof right there of the fiery serpents. The minister has been quoting since the beginning of the year, and we know that it is now national news. But he told us about this at least most recently 2 or 3 years ago at Savior's Day when he said these people were going to go buy up guns to use them against us out of their anger, and their mask of civility would be removed. What we're looking at today is those without knowledge or a proper knowledge being overwhelmed by circumstances and situations, and those who have some knowledge, our hearts are failing us because now our faith is being tested. Because at this point in our, it is only our faith in God and our obedience to his word and our discipline that is going to get us through this hour. That's why the man Farrakhan, who's the discriminating force, when he says something, we either fall on one side of it or another, and this hour we're living in, if we choose the wrong side of that truth to sit on, if we sit on the wrong side of that fence, the recompense, what comes back quickly from disobedience or not following divine guidance, is a quick and thorough lashing that comes through the form of fiery serpents, and the judgment of God is on us right now. So I think, brother, our hearts failing us is a critical, critical thing, not just because of the Monsanto misfed foods that we're eating and the lack of nutrients. That's what physically is happening to us. But the greater thing that we're being misfed on that is making our real hearts fail, not our physical hearts, which are important and pump the blood and we can't live without, but the heart of our thinking is failing today, so we must not rely on our own understanding, and God out of his mercy isn't requiring you and I to understand or know the way. He's given us a man to lead us in the way and get us safely across the lake onto the other side if we would simply heed the guidance and the example of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, brother. Then our hearts would be less stressed because we wouldn't have to try to figure it all out for ourselves. We can follow the man who's being guided to guide us through safely.
Praise be to Allah. Brother Tony Muhammad, sir.
Yes, sir.
Talk to the listeners real fast. We've got about a little less than 10 minutes now. What should the American people be doing right now as we speak?
As we speak, we should be, the American people in general, should be paying attention to what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is teaching. As he is a guide, a warner, not just to us as members of the Aboriginal nation, the Nation of Islam, but to all, including white people, as he is offering to them, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad offered to them, not only an opportunity to extend their time, but an opportunity to save their lives. And so I believe the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan put it this way, that the true religion of God is submission, obedience. And so obedience, regardless as to what our current understanding of religion is, he is teaching us on this very special program the time and what must be done, how submission, obedience to God will prolong America's time and will possibly save it from the great calamities that are described in both Bible and Holy Quran. But it is up to us as members of the Nation of Islam to carry on the word and give it to our people by way of the Final Call newspaper, by inviting them into our homes, by setting up forums where we could all hear and see the time and what must be done lecture series. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan went into how Master Farad Muhammad said that he would climb a mountain 40 miles high just to teach one. And he described how he went into how in the program that there is no mountain 40 miles high. There is no such mountain that is that high. Now, even Mount Everest in this country is even anywhere close to being that high. And then he described how our journey, our mission is likened unto how it's described in Surah 90. If I may read it very quickly.
Yes, sir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And what will make thee comprehend what the uphill road is? It is to free a slave or to feed in a day of hunger, an orphan nearly related, or the poor man lying in the dust. Well, if we take a look at these conditions, slavery, hunger, orphans, poor man lying in the dust, this describes our condition here in North America and really all over the Caribbean, Central and South America, referring to the rejected, the despised. This is our condition. And so we came out of that condition. The uphill road is devoting ourselves to the mission to a degree that we are performing in accordance with the mission as instructed by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because that's where our success lies, going in and among the people, informing them about the time and what must be done. And so this is what needs to take place in this time for us to become successful as a people.
Thank you, sir. Brother Ray Muhammad, sir, you've got 2 minutes, sir. What should the American people be doing right now, if you can, sir, in 2 minutes? Just talk from your heart, soldier.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm reading the scripture. It says, I heard a voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, and be not partakers of her sin, that ye not receive of her plagues. For her sin hath reached into the heavens, and God hath remembered her iniquities. It's time to come out of her. Come out of what? Come out of the licentiousness of America. Come out of her mindset. Let's turn back to being what the Honorable Louis Farrakhan said we are by nature. Let's turn back to God. You asked the question, what should America be doing in this dispensation of time? We should be praying like we ain't never prayed before. But we should be praying to the right God, not the one that we're going to be sitting around here in a couple of weeks celebrating what they call Easter and all of that foolishness and those things like that. We should tune in to the time and what must be done every Saturday at 6 o'clock Central and 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time so we can understand what time it is. And time is what time is dictating the agenda. So I say to the listening audience, man, follow the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. He's on Twitter at Louis Farrakhan. He's on Facebook, Minister Louis Farrakhan. Go online, NOI.org, and tune in to the national programs of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad as given to us by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. Man, let's get up out this. This bag of foolishness that we're in and go after our people with a vengeance. So, Brother Jihad, man, I thank you so very much for allowing me to be a part of this program tonight. If I was a tad that strong, blame my father for that because he kind of put it into me a few days ago.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Ray. Brother Abel, sir, you got 2 minutes, sir. What say you? What do you want to tell the people who are listening tonight and the American people in particular? What should we be doing, sir? In your own words, you got 2 minutes, sir.
Yes, sir. I would start by saying just copy and paste what Brother Ray just said and put my name
yes,
in front
sir.
Of the two.
Yes, sir.
And I had this one other quick point. I would just
yes,
urge
sir.
Our people that no matter what you think you may know about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, what does it hurt you and what would you lose to hear him for yourself? Don't listen to a soundbite. You don't have to worry about somebody spotting you at a meeting or a mosque. From the privacy of your home on your cell phone or your computer, tune in to NOI.org at 6 p.m. and hear him for yourself.
That's
right.
And
then you decide, is he a hate teacher? Is he an anti-Semite? You decide for yourself. because I know that's what the enemy fears, that we would listen to him for ourselves and the scales be removed from our eyes. So that's what I would encourage each one, that no matter what you may think, come and listen, and if you have a question or two, ask a believer or follower of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, but hear him for yourself and then decide, not decide based off